Pro Football Weekly podcast is back. That's right. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and I have found a new partner in crime. I am so pleased to welcome to the podcast, actually to welcome back to the show, but going from guest to co-host, it's Eric Edholm, new to Pro Football Weekly, or back at Pro Football Weekly, and now here to kind of prop up this podcast a little bit as well. Eric, what's going on, my man?
Well, you're talking about crime. I just want to, you know, remove myself from any illegal wrongdoings, anything like that. I try to stay on the straight and narrow, but, you know, I'm happy to be here nonetheless. Yeah.
Very good. Well, yeah, you guys will recognize Eric's voice. He has been on the show a couple different times, but that was before we had welcomed back Eric into the PFW fold. We're thrilled to have him. We hope you guys have been enjoying his early contributions over at ProFootballWeekly.com. And yeah, depending on how this goes, hopefully we'll have Eric back on the podcast a bunch. So we took a week away. We went through the whole NFL in terms of reviewing off seasons, and now we can kind of dive into training camp a little bit. So before Eric and I get into that, a quick reminder to please head to iTunes if you haven't already and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast and leave us a rating and a review while you're there. That's much appreciated. And Eric, let's just kind of jump right in. You and I were in Indianapolis last week for some Lions Colts practices, and I'm kind of kicking myself because I wish we had just recorded. We went out to dinner the first night to watch some action, and had we just recorded that conversation, our podcast would have been done already.
That's right. And you know, fresh in the moment of seeing the bliss, the pure bliss that is Scott Tolzien at quarterback, I think we would have been in rare form that night. But say it's a lost opportunity. What can you say?
Yeah. Well, what we were doing at the Marriott Bar and Grill was checking out Mitch Trubisky's preseason debut. I think that's as good a place to start as any. It was kind of the story of the first week of the preseason, Eric, was not only Trubisky, but a handful of rookie quarterbacks. Kind of ironically, it seems like this is the year when none are really set to play too early, and I can't remember a debut for a handful of guys like the one we saw this past weekend.
Yeah, I guess the Trubisky thing was probably the most, I don't want to say stunning, because obviously we're talking about the number two pick in the draft. Everyone right. knows the kid has a lot of talent, but and I know you got to see him in camp. First day I was down at Bears training camp, it was their first full padded practice. You know, I think I'd taken about four sips of my coffee that day, and he'd already fumbled three snaps by that point. So, you know, you go, oh boy, here we go. It's the little things, right? This is going to be a redshirt year, and they'll ride Glennon out as long as they can, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, once he kind of got those little things down, you know, coming from a shotgun offense, totally different system there at UNC. You know, once he started looking a little more comfortable in that practice, and then in the next practice, probably about 8 days later, you saw him uncork some beautiful throws. Now, granted, he was working with a third-team line and everything, but, you know, the glimpses of greatness were there in practice. They weren't consistent. He didn't look better than Glennon or Mark Sanchez. So to see him in that game, even against third-team defenses and all that, and even working out of the shotgun, moving pockets, kind of making it, you know, easy on him, you and I were talking about it, like, those would have been great throws against first-team defenses. Those would have been, you know, money plays in any kind of circumstance. So you had to like what you saw in that small sample size. But I get why they're still kind of pumping the brakes a little on him. It's, you know, you want to be careful not to overhype him and get too far ahead of your skis a little bit.
Right, and I think it was the juxtaposition of seeing how bad Mike Glennon was, too, in those first two or three series. I think his second pass attempt was a pick six to Chris Harris. And then to see Trubisky come in there, and you make a really good point. I think Dowell Loggins deserves credit for the way that he made it easy. I don't want to say made it easy, but certainly made Trubisky as comfortable as possible with the moving pockets where he's best. And just really excellent stuff. And John Fox has certainly said this week that they're sticking with the plan, and that obviously they'd rather see Trubisky succeed than the alternative, so they're excited, but they are sticking with the plan. But I don't think there's any question, Eric, this now puts some pressure, some very early pressure on Mike Glennon to look exponentially better than he did in his first time out.
Yeah, it would be a different story if Glennon went out there, played two series, you know, let a field goal drive, let a touchdown drive, you know, didn't turn the ball over, looked like he was at least in command of the offense. But the fact that he was, what, 2 of 8 passing, threw one up for grabs, even, you know, even under pressure, it was a bad throw that was picked off. So, you know, all it's the contrast that was so stark. And now if Trubisky was in there during those first two series, who knows how he does. But I think he would have at least looked the part a little better than Glennon did in his Bears debut at Soldier Field. So, yeah, it puts pressure on Glennon. And you made the point when we were talking before, all you have to do is scan down that Bears schedule and see, oh boy, I mean, they've got a murderer's row the first half of the season. And if they're 0-4, 0-5, struggling to score points, who knows what happens at that point.
Yeah, Eric, and I thought that prior to these debuts. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it is, as you said, I don't think they're going to see a team with a losing record last season until week 7 or 8. They open with the NFC champs, Steelers early, Packers early. It is indeed going to be some rocky waters that likely Mike Glennon will have to navigate, but we'll see what happens. I don't know how much you saw of Pat Mahomes, Eric, but I think it's a good segue because he's the other guy who was certainly expected to get a red shirt behind Alex Smith, of course, on the Chiefs. Chiefs move up to 10th overall to get Mahomes. But I have to ask you, I thought that after the draft, and it seems like everything since Kansas City, the moves they've made kind of make it seem like they're not all in this season and they're looking down the road a little bit. Does that kind of paired with Mahomes' debut change anything in Kansas City from your vantage point?
Yeah, certainly they're the team that I've maybe walked back on just a little bit, because obviously last season they showed they're good enough to get into the playoffs and kind of reach a certain point. You know, I mean, it was a disappointing loss at home to the Steelers, but you still saw at least the core of a championship team in place, or, you know, a team that if things broke right, you could sort of envision them getting to a Super Bowl. They're still talented, but firing their general manager, letting Jeremy Maclin walk, you know, not making a few more aggressive moves for this season. I get why they wanted Mahomes. It made sense. It was one of the boldest moves in Chiefs draft history, but
right. You're
right. It almost suggests like they realize they've kind of reached their ceiling a little bit with Smith. They'll probably let him play out the string this season. We'll see. That's maybe come into a little bit more doubt now, but yeah, you almost get the idea that Andy Reid is here to stay. You know, he wouldn't make a move like that, you know, sign off on a move like that if he was going to be coaching for the next few years. And B, that they realize Alex Smith is only capable of doing so much with this team.
The Chiefs have made it easy to forget, Eric, that they were one questionable Eric Fisher hold from maybe getting to the AFC title game last year.
Right.
It's hard to know what direction things are going, but we will watch Mahomes closely. He didn't get quite as much run as Trubisky and some of the other guys we'll discuss, but I think impressed early on. Eric, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised when Deshaun Watson unseats Tom Savage, but do you think that timeline is now accelerated? It's an interesting situation for Houston, obviously, with that championship caliber defense and Deshaun Watson looking like the moment wasn't too big for him. I don't think that should surprise anyone with some of the stages he's played on recently.
Yeah, it's been interesting to hear some of the comments of, you know, the people with the organization. Bill O'Brien obviously heaped a lot of praise on his rookie. But then you heard DeAndre Hopkins, a Clemson guy, by the way, who, sorry about that, it was actually, you heard DeAndre Hopkins say, and this is a guy he easily could say, look, I'm dying for good quarterback play here. I want Deshaun Watson on board and all that stuff. But
yep. He
said early on, Tom Savage was the guy until further notice. So that was really kind of notable to me. Now, obviously, at this point, Watson has continued to impress. He looks the part. He clearly is mature enough. You know, their schedule early on isn't insane, but they open with 2 or 3 on the road in a short period of time. They go at New England. You know, you start asking yourself kind of, all right, well, when, if not week one, might they bring Watson in? It's a good question, and it's, you know, it's something you have to think about. So, I don't know. I he's probably the most ready to play right away, but if Savage beats him out, Bill O'Brien may start with that and consider a switch down the road. It's hard to say exactly when that might happen.
Eric, there are a few wide receivers in the NFL that I enjoy watching go up and get the football more than DeAndre Hopkins. He's an awesome player and a lot in front of him in a contract year. He didn't play as well as he needed to last year either, we should mention, in the Brock Osweiler debacle. But I have to kind of joke, I believe it was this time last year when Hopkins was raving about Osweiler and the rapport that they had built throughout the offseason. So just a small grain of salt there.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, look, I love DeAndre Hopkins too. I think that's absolutely worth bringing up. And, you know, Osweiler, and let's put it this way too. The Texans knew pretty early on that they may have a problem with Osweiler. It wasn't like this thing just sort of sprung up out of nowhere. They hoped he could work through it. But I was told, you know, a couple of practices into training camp, they were sitting there saying, you know, we might be in a little bit of trouble here.
Yeah, and speaking of Osweiler, let's move to Cleveland. I don't think we'll talk about Brock a whole lot, but certainly we need to mention DeShone Kizer. And before we do that, I need to mention to our listeners to head to ProFootballWeekly.com. Greg Gabriel, our lead scout, did a really nice piece Monday kind of reviewing the debuts that we're now discussing of all these quarterbacks. And I would think, and Greg wrote that DeShone Kizer, although he was the fourth quarterback selected, is probably in the driver's seat to be the first one who starts. And that's a combination of how excellent he looked kind of laying out those deep balls and standing tall in the pocket, but also kind of what a nightmare Brock Osweiler continues to be. The Browns can sell him as a potential contender in this starting race, but I think we all know better. This still continued to be about swallowing $16 million for another draft pick, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, to me, when everybody kind of overreacted, oh, Osweiler's starting the first game, oh, that must mean he's in the lead. To me, it meant the opposite. It meant almost like, let's get him out of the way. Let's show everybody that he just has these limitations and he's not going to play well with the first team. If he goes out and impresses us, maybe we'll reevaluate a little bit. But, you know, to me, that portended pretty well for Kizer's chances. Now, Cody Kessler is a very steady option. You can't go wrong. You want to play him, you know, September 10th against the Steelers. I could understand that. You know, Kizer is a young kid. He's 21 years old. But We've seen some good stuff from him so far, and the Browns have been impressed beyond where they even thought they'd be at this point.
Eric, as crazy as it sounds, the Browns may be going about it right in terms of having a decent structure in place for a young quarterback. I'm not going to go to the lengths of saying it's what the Cowboys had for Dak last year, but if all things break right, Cleveland could have one of the better offensive lines in football, right? I mean, it could be a lot worse if Kizer's pressed into action early.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, they went out and invested in the line, and this offseason was important for them to do that, I thought. And even though you have, you know, the standbys like Joe Thomas, you have a fixture in Joel Bitonio locked up, I really did think that there were some issues there. And, you know, going out and getting J.C. Tretter and Kevin Zeitler really firm up the middle there. You can figure out who your right tackle is, whether it's Cam Irving or Sean Coleman, a kid I really like coming out. I guess it would have been 2 years ago. He's a little older, but has overcome a lot in his career. And so, yeah, I just it's the kind of thing where a versatile run game too. You know, Isaiah Crowell could be one of those sneaky good players this year. You know, you hope some of the receiving options kind of step up, no matter who's a quarterback. But yeah, it may end up not being a terrible situation, especially with Hugh Jackson, who I don't care what happened last year. He's a creative play caller and a good one.
Yeah, I know Eric likes Hugh Jackson, and I know a lot of people like Corey Coleman, the first rounder from last season, but it is a little troubling the start he's gotten off to. They need him to be healthy. It seems like they maybe had to throw a little bit of extra money at Kenny Britt because of some of the uncertainty surrounding Corey Coleman. Eric, before we move on to a bunch of other issues, we want to talk about some other big stories still to fall out from Friday's trade. And, of course, the Zeke Elliott suspension. Before we do that, I just want to quickly reintroduce our listeners with our great sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. It's the best surprise you know is coming. It offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you're more of a fanatical fashionista, try Lootwear. If you want to geek out your pet, try Loot Pets. Basically, this company has everything for you. It's pretty neat. It has a box that comes in the mail, and this theme for August is going to be Kingdom. Their franchises include The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and The Lord of the Rings. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. thank you again to Loot Crate, a great sponsor, and they've been really on fire with a lot of these franchises in recent months. So a big thank you to them. And Eric, let's talk about the Bills for a minute. I don't know whether you caught any of Nate Peterman's debut. He was the fifth quarterback Greg Gabriel wrote about, and he did fare quite well. But I'm just kind of more interested in the trade that they made last week, the couple trades they made, and everything that's happened since. It almost feels like maybe they're a bit snake bitten after making some pretty trades that on the surface look pretty good.
Yeah, this is the football gods, the injury gods kind of got him a little bit with Jordan Matthews, a chest injury, and then EJ Gaines, I think, getting hurt on his second day in practice. But if you step back and forget that for a moment and look at what they did, it's just, you don't really see trades like this very often in August. Last year, we got the Sam Bradford thing. That was obviously a move of desperation by the Vikings. They felt like they had to do it, and it's looking smarter as they've gone on. With Sammy Watkins, I mean, look, I just think they felt like two things were in play here. One, he's heading into the contract year, not terribly likely to re-sign. Two, it's a player who had a bizarre foot injury last year and re-injured himself during a walkthrough. You know, got stepped on and it was ugly. It was unfortunate, but I think, you know, Brandon being the new GM, Sean McDermott, the new head coach, just said, great player, you know, has similar numbers to Julio Jones at this phase of his career, but can we trust him? Can we believe in him? And so the move for Anquan Boldin was not a move to give him a sidekick, but, you know, in essence, help buttress the loss of Watkins in what amounted to, a draft pick acquisition. So, yeah, it's a fascinating move. EJ Gaines, a free agent next year, too. No guarantee he'll be back. So you're really swapping a six for a two. And it may not feel like the hugest gain in the world, but they're going to be loaded next year. They could have as many as seven picks in the first three rounds. And just a fascinating approach.
Yeah, no doubt. And with it's a great point by you. Eric tweeted really right after the fact that now the Bills are kind of modeling what the Browns have done and have a ton of ammunition to move up if they're going for a quarterback next year, whatever they may do. Remember, they grabbed Kansas City's extra first rounder in the trade down to get Tre'Davious White. So an interesting deal. As far as the Rams are concerned, Eric, Jared Goff obviously needs all the help he can get. I don't know. We'll see if Jared Goff's even going to be the guy there long term. But giving up more precious draft picks, less Snead, that's kind of a thing for him. It seems like quite a dice roll potentially with Sammy Watkins, even as a 1-year rental.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously they have the cap space and they have the ability to go re-sign him if they want. You know, they made big splashes this year with Andrew Whitworth, who was, you know, essentially a 1 or 2 year rental as well, and, you know, some other pieces in free agency. You know they have to make this work. I mean, Les Snead was no guarantee to return to this job, and
right.
You're right. I mean, after bringing in a number of pass catchers, Cooper Kupp, you know, they drafted the tight end Gerald Everett. You know, they brought in Robert Woods, who was Watkins' teammate as well. Drafting, two or three guys last year, Mike Thomas, Pharaoh Cooper. Thomas obviously has a suspension coming up. And giving big money to Tavon Austin. So that's really, you know, six-ish receivers plus the tight ends that they've invested a lot in. And so it may feel like a little bit of overkill, but they need answers, and Goff needs help. And he's been kind of up and down to this point. I was stunned he only had one series with the first team offense there in the preseason game against the Cowboys. So I believe in Sean McVay. I think he's a smart coach. I can't wait to see how this all works out, but there's still a lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, the Rams don't have a lot of draft capital already because of the Jared Goff trade, and now to give up more for Watkins. I don't know. He obviously is a talented guy, and maybe it's a home run in Hollywood, but I definitely have my doubts. The third part of this trade, Eric, is with the Eagles, of course. You mentioned Jordan Matthews heading to Buffalo and quickly getting hurt. That's an unfortunate situation. He has a chest injury. He is considered week to week, so we'll keep an eye on that. It certainly shines a light on Anquan Boldin, Zay Jones, some other guys there in Buffalo, Charles Clay, I guess, too. But as far as the Eagles go, Ronald Darby, I don't think there's any question what he does for their corners. I think the corners were probably the biggest remaining weakness for that club at this juncture. Do you think that he's able to turn it around and kind of rediscover his rookie form? And do you think that they have enough with Alshon and with Torrey Smith and everyone drinking the Nelson Aguilar Kool-Aid after two disastrous years that they won't potentially miss Jordan Matthews? Remember, they have a young quarterback who needs weapons too.
Yeah, you're right, and I think it's fair to say they address needs pretty well here, and they're going to have a good pass rush, so I don't think the coverage has to be outstanding. I mean, it doesn't have to be, pristine, but they wanted more of a man corner. Ronald Darby provides that. It makes sense for them, as a team they've made trades with in the past, and so there was a comfort level there, I think. But Rasul Douglas, I don't. If you're counting on him to be your week one press man corner, that may be asking a little bit too much. So, and, Sidney Jones is on NFI, and he's still, a ways away from contributing. That was a good move, I think. Ronald Darby played better in his rookie year, and I was shocked at how well he played. So I still have that little kernel of doubt of him as a player. I don't know that his upside is quite as high as some people say, but with that front four, Fletcher Cox, Timmy Jernigan, Brandon Graham, they draft Derek Barnett. They've got Vinny Curry, who's played well. They brought Chris Long. You almost forget about him. That front four is going to be exceptional this season with Jim Schwartz just sicking the dogs on quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Tim Jernigan in particular in that scheme. Obviously, kind of more of a two-gapping thing he was doing in Baltimore. Now he gets a chance to get upfield. Another guy in a contract year who's just got a golden opportunity in front of him. So interesting to see. And I'm not the biggest Jordan Matthews fan. He drops a lot of passes, and I don't think he's necessarily the most reliable guy. But and I like Nelson Aguilar coming out. I just there's some volatility in that receiver group when you're talking about Alshon and Torrey. And Aguilar, so I'm curious to see how that unfolds. And they like their rookie out of North Carolina, Matt Collins, as well, we should add. Eric, we made it about 25 minutes without mentioning the Cowboys and Zeke Elliott. Again, we're a few days removed. Of course, Friday was when the Elliott news and these trades kind of turned the NFL world upside down, but it's our first time sitting in front of the microphone and getting a chance to podcast, so... and Zeke hasn't been charged with a crime, and he clearly is going to have a very aggressive appeal here. There will be lawyers, as Andrew Brandt would say. But what do you think, just big picture, with Elliott, with the Cowboys, with all the dark clouds this offseason? This has a bad feel in mid-August for a team that was as big a surprise as anyone in the NFL last year.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it may have a bad feel going forward. I'm kind of fascinated to see what the approach is going to be. Roger Goodell, in his dealings with players and with discipline and things like that, he's been inconsistent in terms of the suspensions he's levied, but he's been consistent in one respect, which is he expects players or coaches, in the case of Sean Payton or whoever else, to show up to his office with a suitcase full of contrition, and to accept blame, and to fall on swords, and to look him square in the eye and be truthful. Of course, I understand that, but to really kind of come in and take a one for the team almost. And I don't know that Ezekiel Elliott's going to do that. I haven't gathered the sense that he feels he's guilty. Now, again, that's not up for me to decide, but you get the idea that he's sitting there saying, wait a minute, NFL, you're asking me to explain how these bruises got on this girl, but I don't have an answer because it wasn't me. This is, again, I'm just portraying what he said. I'm not saying I know what happened. So
right.
I think they could appeal, and instead of going in and saying, hey, I'm sorry, I wish I'd done things differently, I wish I hadn't done anything, I think he's going to go in and say, I appeal because I didn't do anything, and I'm angered that this has been given to me. So if that happens, I don't think we're getting a reduction. Now, I know it could happen. Some of those six gamers haven't stuck, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I feel like they might try to seek the injunction from the courts and get him out there week one and try to do everything they can to drag this thing out and put Goodell sort of, out there for people to gnaw at a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly get that same sense. I think they're going to go all in claiming innocence and trying to get him on the field. As you just said, it does. There's a lot to unpack here. A, the NFL's investigation took a year, so now they're up against it, of course, because the suspension was just levied last week, and it kind of makes the timeline a little trickier. But something else you said kind of fascinates me. doesn't Jerry Jones have to share in the culpability of this? I mean, isn't, I know he's a Hall of Famer, and I'm not, I don't want to discredit all of his amazing accomplishments for the league and for the Cowboys, but isn't he also a classic enabler who, as recently as a couple weeks ago, was saying, you know, that Elliott doesn't have any issues? And I guess I just, I wonder where he kind of falls in all this. It's not like this is a one-time thing. I mean, half the defense has been suspended over the past year and a half. And again, at some point, it kind of becomes a trend of the type of character and the type of guys that you're acquiring. I'm trying to tiptoe here. Again, I know Zeke hasn't been charged with anything, but you can't tell me that these are all coincidences.
Yeah, and every NFL team knew about Ezekiel Elliott's, you know, issues coming out of college. They weren't considered, by and large, by NFL standards, all that major because there were no charges against him. But, you know, they knew he liked to have a good time. You know, interpret that how you will. There were teams that had bigger concerns about him than others. Some kind of brushed it off, kids being kids, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, absolutely the Cowboys said, we're willing to take this on. And in some cases, like Dez Bryant, they've had success, sort of, I don't want to say reclamation project, but, you know, they've done a good job of mentoring. And they have guys like Jason Witten and Dak Prescott and whoever else. And, you know, Travis Frederick and all these leaders in the locker room. That's good. You can build a strong infrastructure and hope that guys fall in line. But
right.
Also, Jerry Jones is guilty of patting Roger Goodell on the back last year when they came down hard on the Patriots and saying, yeah, I support the commissioner. This is a good job. Well, now Robert Kraft is saying, dude, ball don't lie. You know, like this is what you get, you know, and whether it's fair or not, that's what's happening. So Goodell is losing some allies, sure. But right now, Jerry Jones is sort of getting a dose of his own medicine a little bit.
Yeah, and again, it does seem like Zeke is kind of digging in his heels with his defense team, and that there is going to be a lot more in this story, and we'll do our best to cover it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We're chatting for a few more minutes on the PFW podcast, kind of catching up on some of the big news. This is our first chance to podcast, Eric and I, together in kind of a co-hosting role, and there's other stuff to get to. So one of the things we kind of half-joked about, or at least discussed while we were on our trip to Indy watching the Colts and the Lions, Eric, was the idea of a fantasy football rookie running back fantasy strategy. if maybe this would be a year where owners would consider, and I'm not saying just exclusively choosing rookies, but kind of front loading or top loading your group with rookies. You were in Cincinnati and talked with Joe Mixon, got to see him a little bit. I know it was just a walkthrough, but let's kind of start there. I think it's a decent segue, of course, after Zeke runs away with the rushing title as the fourth overall pick last year, and then they're saying this running back class as a whole has a chance to be even better.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess we'll start with Mixon. Obviously, you know, speaking of character concerns, they certainly existed with him coming out. But so far, you know, just talking to people there, he's done everything the Bengals have asked. You know, the fans have embraced him. You know, whether you like that or not, it doesn't matter. But the fact is that, you know, right now he's in a really good position with the team. He should be a contributor. The Bengals keep doing a very Bengalish thing, which is saying Jeremy Hill is the starter until further notice. Gio Bernard is healthy and everything's great. And that's fine. It's great to have depth. I don't think they should trade Jeremy Hill. What's the point? You know, you're not saving yourself any money or anything like that. So, but if they keep Mixon off the field, that would be a stunning thing. He's really good. He's fast. He can catch the ball. There's a role for him. It may take a few weeks till he gets, you know, full usage. You know, maybe they inch him along a little like the Chiefs did with Tyreek Hill at a different position. But still, I mean, and you just, like you said, you take a step back and some really good players. I mean, this is, yeah, and really good depending on the format too. I mean, you could have a couple of backs catching 40, 50 passes in their rookie season. McCaffrey is lighting it up. The veteran defenders on that team, few good ones, by the way, are just freaking out at how good he is. And if he stays healthy, Cam Newton throwing him dump offs, you know, that's a pretty good setup. So, you know, you mix in Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook has been great. This could end up being a pretty darn good year by rookie fantasy back standards.
Are you concerned? Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And if there is one position where maybe you wouldn't have to worry about having sort of the guys and I'm talking about fantasy football now, the guys that have a proven track record. I mean, it's probably running back. It'd be great to have a Frank Gore on your bench if you're going to go this route or something like that. But these guys have the least tread on their tires, and these guys we've mentioned so far are all likely heading for big roles. But what about the first one off the board, Eric? Leonard Fournette says last weekend after playing the Patriots that the NFL is easy, and he hasn't been on the practice field since with a foot injury. How concerned are you?
Yeah, he had a history of ankle injuries in college. Exactly. that really, you know, set him back. And, you know, Darius Geis went in there and did sometimes even better than Fournette did, at least consistently. And so, I mean, Fournette was an exceptional college player. Let's not mince words.
Doubt.
But,
yep.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have a bye until later in the season. They've got quarterback issues. You know, they're still trying to figure out if Cam Robinson could play left tackle. And now Fournette's got this concern, too. So, yeah, I would say I'm pumping the brakes a little bit on Fournette. I still think, individually speaking, he's really, really good. If he's averaging 3.4 yards a carry the first few games, people shouldn't lose their minds. I mean, this could happen, you know, and it may take a little bit. This is not Ron Dane. I've heard people make that comparison or something, but he's very, very good football player. The injuries, though, are a worry. And you look at some of the early defenses they face, some pretty good ones there. You know, I think patience is smart with him, and just be a little bit cautious with Fournette. I don't think he's a lockdown, no questions asked fantasy selection.
You know, the Jaguars can actually afford to be patient, believe it or not. Shad Khan may not appreciate me saying that, but with both Chris Ivory and TJ Yeldon, they have a lot invested at the position, and Fournette is, of course, you know, not only the future, or not only the present, excuse me, but even more so the future. So, you know, I think McCaffrey, I'd have to stack him with McCaffrey first. As you said, he's been even making Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly sort of has left them in awe with what he can do in a lot of different facets of his game. So he's exciting, and the Joe Mixon stuff, I don't know what dirt Jeremy Hill has on Marvin Lewis, but you'd have to think it's only a matter of time there. Even with Gio Bernard ahead of schedule in his ACL recovery, you know, if the Bengals offensive line is going to be an issue, I would think it's Mixon and not the plodding Hill who you'd want trying to, or, you know, Mixon and Bernard more so, yeah, than Hill, that you'd want trying to create and make something out of nothing there. And Dalvin Cook, who we only mentioned a little bit, he was his numbers don't jump out from his preseason debut, but his usage does. It looks like, and it's, you know, he's replacing a legend, obviously, but Adrian Peterson was never a true three down back. He never was someone that they really trusted a whole lot, uh-huh, or expected a whole lot from in the passing game. It looks like Dalvin Cook is going to have an opportunity, especially with Latavius Murray slow in his debut coming off ankle surgery. Cook kind of looks like he can be maybe the total package for them.
I agree, and everybody, you know, kind of lost their mind over his poor workouts, and they were even worse than I thought they'd be. I didn't expect, right, him to work out as poorly as he did before the draft. But yeah, all you do is watch the tape, and it's not perfect, but you see some just special, breathtaking, explosive runs in college, and, you know, catching a little flare pass and taking it 40 yards. And, you know, he ran a wheel route against, oh, let me think what team that would have been. I'm kind of blanking. I'm forgetting which game it was. It was later on in the season. And, you know, I mean, he ran it like a wide receiver. And he just sort of looked like, wow, this guy's young and he's just starting to scratch the surface. But he is pretty mature in his ability to kind of harness his talent. So, yeah, I think they like him up there. He had his character issues too. You know, I sound like a broken record, but so far he's been in line. Their offensive line, yep, even though it's rebuilt, is in better shape than the Bengals is. That's maybe the difference there. So, you know, and he's got fewer guys to really kind of overcome in the depth chart. So I could see why somebody would like Dalvin Cook a little more than Mixon right away. But Mixon, I think, you know, is going to have his share of big games too.
And interestingly, Eric, we should mention that all of these headliner rookie running backs, they all have offensive lines with some concerns.
Yeah.
The Vikings threw money at the tackle position. There's no guarantee it's going to be better. Carolina willingly scooped up the tackle the Vikings didn't want, Matt Khalil, obviously, and they've got their own issues. Cincinnati, we discussed losing their two best blockers, and the Jaguars, no one really knows, obviously. So I think that is an important part of this, at least. And then Just lastly on the rookie running back fantasy strategy, if it's something you're considering, is there a later round guy that you would kind of hone in on, whether maybe it's actually a couple guys whose offensive line shouldn't be as big a concern and they are going to maybe have opportunities? I kind of have an eye on Jamal Williams in Green Bay and maybe Kareem Hunt in Kansas City. Either of those guys or someone else that we haven't mentioned that we should?
Yeah, those are good calls. Believe it or not, Alvin Kamara is going to get his chance. I talked to somebody in New Orleans who felt like, you know, he's going to get his chance to probably to start more of a returner, third down back, pass catcher. But, you know, they traded up for him. They gave a second round pick to go get him. So they really, really like him, even if Adrian Peterson is there, Mark Ingram's there. So that's one to keep an eye on. Yeah, I like your choices. Kareem Hunt could be good in time. Does Andy Reid trust him right away? We'll find out. I've knocked down Samaje Perine a little just because he hasn't picked it up as quickly as everybody hoped. Marlon Mack banged up in Indy. He's somebody to keep an eye on. I'm just trying to think. Jamal Williams is a pretty good one. And then other guys I'd have to think are a little bit. Jeremy McNichols in Tampa. I'm still trying to get the full word on him, but he's somebody that if they're not convinced Doug Martin when he comes back as a starter, you know, sure, maybe McNichols is a decent option too.
Yeah, a lot of maybe just guys on that Tampa running back depth chart, but Jaquizz Rodgers is there, of course, and has some history with Dirk Cutter. They've got Charles Sims in the change-up role. McNichols was slowed during the offseason with a shoulder injury, but someone they do like a lot. And then I'll just get back to Jamal Williams to finish. Obviously, Ty Montgomery, it's his first full year as a running back. He did have a fumble in the preseason debut, so while Williams' numbers didn't really stand out, the fact that he didn't have any egregious mistakes and that he has been impressing in pass protection, and of course just his presence in this Packers offense, always a fantasy juggernaut, I think kind of makes him someone to kind of keep your eye on.
Yeah.
And
the thing with Green Bay too, real quick point, is they do so much two-minute offense that if you're not a good pass protector, you're just not going to be on the field. Some teams will, you know, rotate personnel in and out, but if they trust you to be a three-down back, something that Eddie Lacy wasn't always good at, they'll keep you on the field, and they won't take you off mid-drive. I know that sounds a little weird, but that's a factor. So that's why Williams is going to get his chance.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And, Eric, we're going to close with this. We have just a couple minutes left. I'm going to put you on the spot. If you don't have anything to say on it at all, that's absolutely fine. But it's too prevalent in the NFL kind of news cycle right now, just in society, for me not to mention it. There were already more anthem protests in the preseason debut. Both Michael Bennett and Marshawn Lynch opted to sit. Everyone's still talking about Colin Kaepernick, his unemployment. LaDainian Tomlinson and Kenny Easley used their platform at the Hall of Fame enshrinement ceremony really courageously, in my opinion, to speak out and really eloquently, too, on some societal issues. Just your thoughts on it, if this is going to be another NFL season where we're talking about this frequently, and whether these guys can, whether it'll make a difference, I guess. I know it's kind of a loaded question for you, but yeah. I just feel we should at least hit on this here in the podcast.
I have nothing to say. No, I'm kidding. If you don't have anything to say, I mean, look, guys, no matter what side you're on with this thing, whether you don't like standing during the anthem or you know, bringing attention to yourself or whatever it may be, that's fine. But obviously these guys are trying to highlight what they feel is something society needs to work on, which is eliminating some of the hatred from these identity politics, whether it's, you know, the KKK or white supremacists or whatever it may be. You know, this is something that, look, did the media probably pay too much attention to this thing in the first place? Oh, perhaps, yeah. It's we hope, a small segment of society. But players are using their voices here, and I think they're welcome to do it. Obviously, they want racism cured, just like most sane, reasonable, level-headed people do. And so, you know, the NFL and teams are kind of struggling with, do they embrace it? Do they reject it? Are they trying to push back at all? And that will still exist, but credit Colin Kaepernick for bringing this issue up, taking a stance in the background, not being very vocal since then, and we're still talking about a year plus later. So it's been a fascinating story to chart. It seems like teams, a lot of them who are seeking quarterbacks, have kind of gone out of their way to, if not eliminate Kaepernick as an option, just not even bring him up or considering him. I still want to know what happened. I've not been able to exactly find out. The Seahawks are not known as a team that bring people in if they don't have interest. They brought him in, and the feeling I got was something happened that didn't exactly sit right with either side, whether it was Kaepernick or the Seahawks. So, mm-hmm. you know, that felt like a golden opportunity for him to come in, given Trevon Boykin's, you know, issues and off the field. And I know he played well in the first preseason game, but when that passed and the Ravens' opportunity passed, we're starting to get to the point where you wonder whether he'll ever play again. So yeah, I think it's something that may not be all that obvious.
I think until he comes out and addresses the issue, or until a team signs him, we're probably not gonna be able to stop talking about this. Not that we're looking to stop talking about it, but I don't think this story is going anywhere. So that's gonna do it for today's Pro Football Weekly podcast. We really appreciate you being with us, Eric. This was fun. It was awesome to have you in the co-host chair. I may try and drag you into it again, because I think people enjoy hearing another voice than just my own, certainly. And you bring a lot of great insight, not only to this podcast, but to ProFootballWeekly.com, where you've been just an awesome addition over the past couple weeks.
Wow, I should come on more. You're really kind of buttering me up here. I don't think I'm worth it, but I appreciate it. That's great, you know, so thank you, man.
We had a lot of fun here on the Pro Football Weekly podcast today. We will be back together, Eric and I, and I know I for sure am heading up to Green Bay in a couple weeks. Eric may or may not be joining me, but we'll have a lot more coverage of the preseason as it continues, and make sure you keep it locked in at ProFootballWeekly.com. Thank you so much. One more big thank you, one initial, thank you to our producer, Dan Mott. I'll be sending him our files here shortly, and then I always exit by thanking you guys for listening, and we'll look forward to having you back, hopefully next week, on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.